Hello. I'd like to thank my colleagues at UCSF, Libby Smith and Ruth Malone. And if you notice, I've changed the title to, we found this quote after the original title of Keeping Veterans Smoking. It's a quote from one of the advocates for doing so. This is part of a larger grant to study tobacco industry involvement in the military and with veterans. And you can imagine the shenanigans we found and have written about. I have no disclosures to share, but my colleague Ruth Malone owns one share each of Philip Morris International, and R.J. Reynolds for purposes of going to their shareholders' meetings and causing trouble. So in 1992, a bill was passed by Congress making it mandatory for every one of the VA facilities in the nation, 171, to provide a smoking lounge, either inside, separately ventilated, or a smoking hut, a shelter, outdoors. And up until then, the VA had been in the vanguard of tobacco control, especially around cessation. And they, the leadership in the VA was not happy about this. And we were interested in knowing how this came about, and we suspected the tobacco industry. The industry had a long history of promoting tobacco to the military. It's their perfect demographic. Young, mostly male, mostly working class, and high school educated. They have given a great deal of money to Congress, lobbying, including many with military oversight, and especially those from tobacco-growing states. And they portray smoking as a right and completely ignore the deadliness of tobacco. And with veterans especially, framing it as a right has special resonance. Our methods were to look through the documents. We are primarily documents researchers. These were documents, as most of you know, that were made available through the Master Settlement Agreement in the 90s and have grown quite a bit since then, thanks to other lawsuits. We triangulate. We take what we find in the documents and we verify it. So we did media searches, legislative history searches, and then when it became law, we checked the Cornell U.S. codes. We interviewed Ed Derwinski, who was the first secretary of the VA and a primary player in this case study. And then we did Freedom of Information Act requests to, and phone calls and email survey to the 171 facilities to find out what was going on in the ground. This happened 20 years ago. We wanted to know, we were interested in costs and we were interested in a count of how many shelters they had. So in the 1980s, this episode begins when a growing number of these facilities requested permission from the VA not to sell tobacco. The Tobacco Institute, which as many of you know, was the political arm of the large tobacco companies, which was disbanded as a result of the Master Settlement Agreement, the lobbying arm, they were very alarmed because they were fearful that such a move might lead to a total ban on smoking and sales, not only in the VA, but in the armed services. So they went into action. They lobbied the leadership of the VA about what a bad thing it was. They instigated about a dozen leaders of military and VA groups to sign a letter objecting to giving permission to these VAs not to sell tobacco. And they did something that the industry often does when they don't like a regulation. They challenge who's got the authority to make that regulation. So they were able to get a congressional hearing that took a look at the fact that it was the physicians, the medical establishment within the VA, who actually had authority over what the canteen sold, and they tried to take it away from them. They were unsuccessful. So here's Ed Derwinski, who was the very first secretary of the VA in 1989 when it was established as a cabinet-level post. And he was a tobacco control advocate. He felt that it was inappropriate to smoke at VA hospitals. At that time, more and more hospitals were going smoke-free or beginning to. And then he realized that it was untenable to ban smoking at these facilities but allow the sale of cigarettes. So he issued a directive that there would be no smoking and no sales at the VAs. The Tobacco Institute hired a West Virginia firm to create a group of veterans who were supposed to be grassroots clamoring for, in protest of these tobacco control measures. Now, veterans are very well respected by Congress people. They're always trying to present themselves as veteran friendly, even if in reality they're not meeting their needs in terms of resources. We have many documents that are very clear that it was in fact a grassroots organization, and they were very concerned that it was not a grassroots organization, but they were very concerned to portray themselves as such. And here's an example of how they tried to have their materials have a grassroots look. And this is their most popular material that they used on posters and brochures in order to recruit other veterans to get involved in this issue. And what they say on the poster is, they stood up for our rights, and the parentheses there is when they could stand up. This man is missing one leg. He's in a wheelchair. Now it's our turn to stand up for them. So the industry's arguments were that this was a violation of the veterans' freedom. This is what they fought for. It's their choice. But as I said, it had great resonance with veterans and with Congress. There was concern about loss of profits, which is an argument they make in many arenas, and also concern about setting a dangerous precedent. And what else would be banned? Will they be taking out chocolate from the shops? Concern about crime and loss of profits with the black market. And here's one that was a little bit new. They argued that if the VA took this policy, then veterans who needed health care would shun the health care system, the VA system, because they would be offended by not being able to smoke. This is a quote from the so-called leader of the Veterans for Smokers' Rights Coalition, from which I got the title. They have already given so much. Smoking is one of the few joys these guys have. You're not going to rehabilitate a 75-year-old guy who is going to die anyway. So much for their concern for their comrades In 91, the coalition was able to pressure Congress to introduce a bill to compel the VA to provide the smoking shelters and to allow smoking. And the outcome was mixed. Every VA facility was compelled to provide a place to smoke. However, the ban on tobacco remained, and that was largely due to the lobbying efforts of Senators Alan Cranston and Arlen Specter, who were tobacco control advocates. As part of the new law, the General Accounting Office was charged with estimating the costs, which they did so at between $4 to $24 million to construct these shelters. And they got this information from polling each of the 171 facilities, and this was the range between 1,000 and somehow 1,020,000 for a shelter that came from St. Paul, Minnesota. And this, mind you, does not include maintenance or replacement costs, which we know they've had to do. And also, the costs came from the regular VA budget that would otherwise go to medical care, research, and services for veterans in general, not just those who smoke. In 2005, the Veterans Health Administration, which is part of the VA, did a survey, and 92% of the facilities in the country responded, claiming that there were at that time 783 smoking shelters. A quarter of them were indoors. Some were for employees or patients only, but most of them were for both. And some claimed that they had as many as 32 smoking shelters on their premises. And our FOIA results, we got about a quarter of the facilities responding. And largely that's because they're only required to keep their data so long, their paperwork. They can destroy it. But 85 shelters were reported at almost $3 million at between $6,500 and almost $200,000 per shelter, an average of $38,000. And our estimates are if we use the lower cost, the $6,500, that would be $5 million based on those 783 shelters. If we use the average cost of $38,000, it comes to $30 million. We didn't go near the upper cost. So that's the range of what they spent, what we tallied. And about half of the VAs that we called responded and told us that almost every facility had at least one outdoor smoking hut. By 2008, there was a federal directive that said that there could be no smoking at any indoor federal facility. So they, at this point, went built outdoors, and there was another flurry of spending. One facility said that there was an attached shelter, and two facilities said that they were either completely smoke-free or going to be, which violates the current law. So what we ended up with is the VA setting policy for the military. Once again, personal freedom trumped the health argument in Congress, and the VA is continuing to spend millions to enable smoking at the expense of everything else they might do. And bear in mind, they spend $500 million a year treating veterans suffering from tobacco-caused disease. So in conclusion, the Institute of Medicine has called for a smoke-free military within 20 years, and they said in order to get there, we have to repeal this lamentable law that requires smoking shelters. And we need to expose the industry's use of front groups and their exploitation of veterans, and a focus on the Congress members who are using the veterans as cover for doing the business of the industry. And it's high time that a coalition was built between public health and like-minded vets. Thank you.